Vote in the Friendo Awards now. Download the Wrestling Amino app and make your voice heard in our Best of 2016 awards. The link to the app is in the description.
Hey, Friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the Dirt Sheet, the only place for pro wrestling news you need to be going to right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson and also wherever fine podcasts are available, including iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, soundcloud.com/Steven Larson, but not at Spotify.
Not yet. Hopefully in the near future.
The year 2017 is bright, chock full of possibilities, Larson, and potential.
Yes.
So there's this distinct potential that we'll figure out Spotify in the year 2017.
Yeah, maybe.
Feels like we're next to a jet engine, my friend.
Yeah, this laptop of mine is really working right now.
That is the Haas of computers.
It is.
Laptops. That's laptop Haas right there.
Yes. So it's a bit of not much news this week.
Yeah.
So we thought we would take a look back at 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done a couple episodes of Count Out on, I believe, the wrestlers who had the best and worst 2016 last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
This upcoming weekend, we're going to have lists of our favorite matches and the matches that disappoint us in 2016. But because there's so much that happened in the world of wrestling in 2016, we thought we would take this opportunity, this episode of Dirt Sheet, to talk about just kind of general 2016 stuff, kind of the larger stories of the year in our estimation.
And then next week, we're going to do our predictions for 2017. We're going to look back
Correct.
On our predictions from the beginning of 2016.
Correct.
And we're going to look ahead. We got some interesting that one of our friendos tweeted at us our list of our predictions.
Yeah,
and
compiled them.
Ooh, okay. This is be good.
For the most part, we were way off base, but there was a few that we were in the ballpark.
We do have one bit of news that we can confirm. Oh, we're going to talk about that in the second section here. Okay,
yes.
Cool. All right, that's fine. I guess the biggest story from the year 2016 in wrestling was the Women's Revolution.
Yeah. I guess, you know, they dubbed it the Divas Revolution towards the end of 2015. But it seemed to really kick into gear at WrestleMania 32 when they ditched that Divas belt.
That ugly butterfly belt.
And unveiled the awesome-looking Women's Championship.
We got to touch it.
Yes.
When Sasha Banks, one of the 13 times she held it over the past couple months. No, at SummerSlam when she was the Women's Champion. We got to touch it, and then she lost. So that was her. The highlight of us was
that was more your fault. You really touched
giving
it.
Giving Sasha's
kind
mojo.
Of barely.
I didn't rub up on her or anything, man.
No, I said the belt.
I went like this.
I just barely touched it, and you poked at it.
No, I didn't poke at
it. So it's more your fault.
Well, considering she like won it back multiple times, I think we're just fine. So, anyways, yeah, like you said, they ditched the term divas. Now they're superstars. Now they're just in the women's division. It's the Raw Women's Champion. And you got the SmackDown Women's Champion over there. And they've got these really fancy-looking titles. So I think all the fuss about it would be for naught if the bottom line, which is money, wasn't affected.
Yes.
And it was.
Yes.
We saw a ratings boost during their Falls Count Anywhere match back on November 28th. And Sasha Banks versus Charlotte. This is a potential feud of the year candidate, according to you guys in the Friendo Awards, which you guys can vote on right now.
Yes.
That right now is by far the leading vote getter for feud of the year.
Yes.
And so that, you know, the WWE has been treating Sasha, Charlotte, regardless of what you guys think about the feud, they've been treating it as a top feud at times.
Yeah.
It, you know, of course, it main evented at Hell in a Cell.
Yes, they've main evented at least one episode of Raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, the for a while,
two.
Two. I think their interactions,
mm-hmm.
whether it be involved in some sort of match or just a promo,
mm-hmm.
would kick off the third hour of the show.
Right,
that was
exactly,
consistent
yeah.
for several weeks. That was, you know, their segment kicked off the 10 o'clock hour.
It's interesting because in this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer talks a bit about how this mirrors, he talked about it, but it obviously mirrors the fact that there's all sorts of evidence also to suggest that the UFC is experiencing the same thing with their women's
division
matches
as well. Yeah,
they're big money makers, and he points to search terms and you know the internet stuff. Search whatever results and trending things.
Google trends,
I guess. And he illustrates that, you know what? Women's fighting, whether it be because, you know, there's an aspect of, you know, likability involved. And also the fact that those women really duke them out.
Yes.
Regardless of the reason. It's a huge moneymaker, and it's rivaling and often eclipsing the men in the UFC. And similarly, in the WWE, the women, at times, they're eclipsing the men. They're bringing in the big money. And whether you like it or not, whether you think that it's worthy of that or not, that's happening.
Yes.
Like, that is here to stay, and I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yes, me too. The level of competition in the women's division is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. By and large.
Yeah,
I mean the matches that Charlotte and Sasha put on,
mm-hmm.
all very good.
The Bayley Asuka feud this year was fantastic,
yep.
And it created a massive star in Asuka.
Yes,
and there in NXT, she's basically cleared out the division.
Yes,
and
she hasn't lost. She hasn't lost a match
besides Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura. It's kind of a three-way dance here for who's the most anticipated call up.
Yeah.
Between Joe, Shinsuke, and Asuka.
And Asuka's, you know, she's, I mean, there's Shinsuke. He's a top star in NXT,
mm-hmm.
and just right below him was probably Asuka.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, lots of, it'll be interesting in 2017. It'll be interesting to see if there's any, like, we've heard rumors that there's going to be a women's tournament on
yes.
the network,
yes.
although Meltzer says nobody's heard about that since they started talking about the UK tournament, the Bruiserweights.
Yeah.
And so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, if there is going to be a women's Royal Rumble at the Rumble
yes,
this year.
Yes, that's been rumored, yeah.
Not sure if that's going to happen. It makes me wonder if they do a women's tournament on the network, if that might lead to perhaps a women's tag division.
Maybe they'll have a dedicated women's wrestling show like 205 Live too.
There's been promotions that are popping up. You know, Shimmer's one of
yep.
them. I forget a couple of names of a couple of the others, but there might very well be a market for that.
Yes,
you know, for quality women's wrestling yes. just on its own.
Yes, and also outside of WWE,
mm-hmm.
You had Sexy Star
mm-hmm.
in Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Compete and win
mm-hmm.
the Lucha Underground title.
Currently feuding with Johnny Mundo.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a banner year. Probably the best year ever for women's wrestling.
You know, and the funny thing is, dude, like, so we went to that NXT show, and you took your wife, and then I took my niece, who's 13 years old, and she got an absolute kick out of it. And it wasn't just because, you know, Asuka was there and there was some strong female wrestlers, strong women wrestling. You know, she really enjoyed the Authors. She was terrified by the Authors
yeah,
of Pain.
Yeah, yeah.
She really got into it. But it's just really kind of cool that, you know, for the health of the industry, they are potentially opening this up to an entirely new demographic.
Yes.
You know?
And that was kind of the thing, one of the appeals of Bayley, they
mm-hmm.
said too, is that, you know, never before if they had a superstar that could appeal
yeah.
to that broad of a demographic.
Right, exactly.
Like, she appeals to basically everybody.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Also in 2016, this was huge.
Yes.
The WWE bringing in number one, their reach into the indie ranks, but also allowing those indie wrestlers to keep their brand.
Which is a sea change from how they used to do things.
What a massive change. And I think sort of AJ was the first one to come in.
Oh, Samoa Joe.
Was Samoa Joe before AJ?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, yeah, you're right.
But really this year, I mean, think of the people that came to WWE and NXT from the independent ranks or just from other promotions who kept their brands intact.
Mm-hmm.
So you have AJ, mm-hmm. you have Gallows and Anderson.
And it's before we keep on listing off names, Kevin Steen had to change his to Kevin Owens. Finn Balor, Fergal Devitt had to change his to Finn Balor.
Asuka had to change her name.
Asuka. El Generico had to change his name, but he came in 3 years ago.
Hideo Itami.
Right, Hideo Itami, yeah. So just very, like, this is just this year,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
When did Samoa Joe debut?
I think in 2015 at some point. It was 2015.
Okay.
But Shinsuke kept his name. You know, and like AJ and Shinsuke are huge international stars, so mm-hmm. it makes sense for them to keep their name. But Roderick Strong.
Oh, man, Joe debuted as early as May 20th, so man, you're totally right about that.
Wow. Roderick Strong kept his name.
Yeah.
Damo.
Yeah.
Kept his name.
Dan Matha kept his name. Sorry.
But then, I mean, granted, I don't know how long he has been in NXT, but Oney Lorcan,
mm-hmm.
they changed his name. I think his name was Biff Boswick or something in Ring of Honor.
Well, that's great.
But by and large, some of the more established names they brought in from independent or international mm-hmm. promotions this year,
yeah,
they've let them bring their brands over, just license their names, license their brand so they can merchandise it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, it's kind of set a whole new template for how a wrestler gets to WWE. Back before, wrestlers work in the indies, make a name for themselves enough so they can, you know, come to the attention of WWE, sign a contract, and, you know, get into the WWE that way.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as wrestlers like AJ Styles have shown, if you go, you establish your brand worldwide, you can make tons of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, do that for a number of years. And then you come to WWE with leverage and negotiations. You can get a better downside guarantee. You can maybe, in AJ's case, go directly to the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's an interview with Gallows and Anderson I read at some point that they were all cool going to NXT. Or at least of them were.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of expecting it to be repackaged.
Yeah.
But they said, nope.
Yeah.
You're coming straight to Maine as Gallows and Anderson.
You're right. It's interesting because they're looking at what works. Like, why are you going to change something that works so well? I mean, I understand that there's a translation thing, but it's like you take the core of what works really, really well and you stick that. In the case of the Bullet Club, you know, number one merchandise seller in the world, perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, non-WWE, maybe even, mm-hmm. I don't know what their numbers are. But, you know, why are you going to change that? Like, that they look so cool. They were so cool in the Bullet Club. So that's why, you know, they basically just wanted the Bullet Club.
I mean, historically, you know, it makes sense why WWE would want to repackage talents so they would own mm-hmm. the merchandising rights in full.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But when you have wrestlers who have established a brand on the independent circuit mm-hmm. or internationally and have a solid fan base in mm-hmm. place, it doesn't make any sense to completely repackage them and change their name.
Makes no sense.
Because even like Roderick Strong, when he debuted in NXT, I knew the name.
Yeah.
I wasn't that familiar with his work, but I knew the name.
Right, exactly.
And so when I heard he was coming, I was like, oh, cool. I finally get to see him.
Yeah.
You know, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And then a few weeks back, there was an article on Vice Sports about the Young Bucks
mm-hmm.
and how they have like completely changed, or they're right now emblematic of how the paradigm has changed, where people can make really good money on the independent circuit, can make names for themselves, can establish a brand. You got them currently out there now. You got them. You got Adam Cole. Mm-hmm. You got Kenny Omega,
mm-hmm.
who are out there just killing it,
mm-hmm.
put on great matches. I'm sure making tons of money.
Mm-hmm.
And if and when they decide to go to WWE, they will be able to do it at least more so on their terms.
Yeah.
They won't have to take a crap deal just to get their foot in the door.
Well, that's one of the bigger changes also, is like you just said, is the smarts that these guys are displaying. You know, they're all talking. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all talking and sharing how to best maximize their own potential, their own brand, and not get screwed over by like a mark deal or whatever you want to call it. Like Kenny Omega right now is doing, like, that's why we had him sort of at 1B on our sort of top wrestlers of 2016, is because he's doing right now what AJ Styles has already done. Like, it's obvious that, like, there's no doubt that Kenny Omega is going to end up in the WWE. I really have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
He's just right now, especially once he wins that world title off of Okada, he is maximizing his brand. And so when he goes to the WWE, he allegedly already has offers on the table to come in, but he's just increasing the possibility. Like, I don't see him even wanting to go to NXT, you know? I mean, I guess there's a possibility that he'd want to just for the experience. But like AJ told us, I had that experience already. You
in
know,
Ring of Honor,
in Ring of Honor. He's had it a million places. And so Kenny Omega is a massive character who will want to be on the biggest stage.
Yes.
And NXT isn't that.
No.
So he's out there, the Young Bucks, same thing with them. Like, the WWE is going to, they're probably frothing at the mouth to get them. And they're establishing their brand, they're doing very, very well on their own. And they're creating a blueprint for others to come up and make a name for themselves.
I mean, and the Young Bucks and Omega, they have, the Elite has their own YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And beyond that, you can go on YouTube and find hundreds, if not thousands, or hundreds of thousands of the matches, if not in full, bits of them.
Yeah.
Between that, between the streaming services of New Japan, Ring of Honor, you know, you could wrestle internationally.
Flow Sports.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Or here in the States in the independents, or both.
Yeah.
Make money, build a brand, and there's still various opportunities to get fan awareness, viewer awareness, so people can check your workout.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a completely new thing.
And speaking of like the consummate example of what we're talking about is Chris Hero. So he was with NXT in sort of its earliest inception of what it is now.
Yeah.
As the developmental thing that we see it as now. Now it sort of established its own brand. Back when it was first getting established its own brand.
Yeah, well, he signed on when it was still
FCW, he crossed over from FCW into NXT as Cassius Ohno, again, an indie guy who made a good name for himself. And they made him change his name. And so he came in, and the strongest rumor I heard in terms of his release was because he couldn't maintain a certain look. Mm-hmm. Like he couldn't stay trim or cut or whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up releasing him.
But I think by his own accounts, it was a release, but you know,
the door was open.
Yeah, they released him. It's like, let's talk in the future.
Right, exactly. So he went back out onto the indie circuit and had a massive 2016. Like the last 2 years, 2015 and 2016, have been great for Chris Hero.
Yes.
And he's hossed up. Like, he's gotten to the point where he's comfortable wrestling in his own skin and not having to worry about somebody saying, no, you need to be trim. It's like, evidently for him, that doesn't, like, he wants to do things on his own terms. And part of that is hossing up.
Yeah.
You know, he's not like, he's you know, he's got a boiler.
But I think also, too, as WWE has embraced more former indie talent.
Right, exactly.
They've sort of kind of loosened up to a degree on what, in the past, you know, the reputation of WWE is you had to be 6'5 plus.
Oh, they completely. Look at Kevin Owens.
Yeah, exactly.
They
sheer
muscle.
Have.
Yeah. They completely have.
And so now they've kind of, they're willing to accept people that aren't the typical WWE archetype anymore.
Right.
Where they're just huge muscular guys.
Right, exactly. So Chris Hero at a PWG show confirmed, he said, I'm going to address the elephant in the room. And there's the deal. The deal's out there. I pass all the physical stuff. It just has to be approved. Like the final stage has to be approved by the WWE.
Yeah.
And he said he was sad that it was leaked.
Yeah, because he wanted to be the one that told all the indie promoters.
Yeah, exactly. So this is going to be interesting because he was in NXT. At number one, we don't know if he's going to be in NXT or if he's going to be in WWE.
We don't even know if he's going to be Chris Hero, if he's going to be
Cassius Ohno.
We don't know.
Exactly. So that's going to be fascinating, but it's really, really cool because now everything is different. Like he went out and he did what we're talking about. He bolstered his brand that was already pretty strong, and he was one of the top names in 2016 on the indie circuit. Now he's coming back to WWE in a completely different landscape, and it's only been 2-3 years.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how next year, 2017, this trend's going to continue.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you have guys like Marty Scurll, who seemingly came out of nowhere this year.
Yeah.
Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
These guys that now, thanks to the internet, thanks to streaming services, can start out, put on amazing matches, and very quickly garner a pretty significant fan base.
Well, this is where our next sort of story leads into, the next 2016 best of goes into is WWE's...
Most interesting.
WWE's international expansion. So just a couple weeks ago, or last week, it was announced WWE is putting on a UK tournament. To 18 competitors were signed.
16.
18,
yeah,
Wrestling
two alternates.
Universe at 18, yeah.
Yeah, it's 16 competitors and two alternates, sorry.
They're going to be vying for the new UK championship.
And the plan is, if this goes well, is to have regular UK-based WWE programming. Mm-hmm. So they're going to essentially create a UK territory under the WWE banner.
Yeah, and Triple H, Paul Levesque, has said he wants to spin this off into a weekly show a la the 205 Live.
Yeah, and he said in during this press conference this is kind of like the first step in kind of, I can't remember the exact terminology that he used, but we referenced it last week when we reported on the story, of localized global product. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, you know, they're going to have this tournament, start doing, if the tournament goes well, weekly programming from the UK.
Right.
And one would assume they would look to expand to other countries or territories.
Now, the interesting thing is how this is going to affect those localities and their indie scene, because right now the UK scene is blowing up. And it's interesting because this is specifically a UK championship. It's not a European championship. Yes. And so they're using this to see how they could possibly expand further. And the interesting thing that in Meltzer's Wrestling Observer this week, he's sort of pointing out some of the more interesting bits about this. And he says, you know, most of the wrestlers in the UK, like, their ultimate goal is to sign with the WWE. A lot of those wrestlers, you know, of course, are signed to deals with New Japan, Ring of Honor. But this is going to give them even more options when those contracts expire. So some of the bigger names that aren't signed, that didn't, you know, end up signing with because they were already signed to Ring of Honor, New Japan. But once those contracts expire, this WWE platform is going to be sitting here, UK specific, which a lot of people are going to be seeing as a springboard directly into the main roster.
Yes.
You know, because that's what we see with 205 Live. It's basically, okay, you know, you got these guys who are in 205 Live, and a lot of them are already on Raw.
Yeah.
But are they going to be able to cross over into the main roster?
Yes.
Does that matter to them? Hey, we're in the WWE. You know, it might be the UK, whatever they call the UK division.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, it won't be a developmental brand.
Right.
But it could be.
In some aspects, it'll feel that way.
Yeah, it'd be a place where wrestlers could stay close to home,
mm-hmm.
you know, hone their craft,
mm-hmm.
gain a fan base,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the WWE is right there to take notice.
And the WWE said, look, we're signing into these deals.
They're not exclusive deals.
But they're not exclusive. Yeah. They can still go for WCPW, ICW, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So this is kind of interesting also, too, is that the UK expansion is there's speculation that it is going to be a blueprint for other local expansions.
Yes.
And so there is an interview in Japan with, I hope I get this name right, Takaki Kidani. Who's the Bushiroad CEO, runs New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he said, and this is translated by Chris Charlton, we are entering a phase where you either with, it's kind of anti-WWE sentiment here, he says we're entering a phase where you're either WWE or you're against them. He says WWE has a lot of weaknesses and time is not on their side. He's talking about how WWE relies so heavily on the cable TV revenue and the cable TV landscape is shifting
very
so heavily.
So, yeah.
That we don't know. He speculates that within 3 to 5 years, it's going to completely collapse. I would really doubt that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But WWE, even if it does, they have the network.
Mm-hmm.
And if, for whatever reason, cable TV completely collapse. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if cable service as we know them kind of changes to more of an a la carte service.
I mean, when...
That I suspect would happen.
It's going to be interesting when something like Google Fiber goes sort of national.
Yeah.
Because at that point, like you said, there might be an a la carte thing. Like I already do. I'm actually contemplating getting cable TV back just because it'd be easier to check it. Like if we're going to start doing Lucha Underground coverage, you know, it just makes it easier.
And you have the option to DVR things.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, I by no means need it because I get plenty, you know, we do plenty here, but I think that that's, you know, if I do that, I'm going to be one of the few who are going back to cable because so many people are cutting the cord right now. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Meltzer concludes that his sort of thoughts with, again, it's possible WWE could purchase a Japanese group, but it's more likely if the UK strategy works, they would try and emulate that in Asia. So I know there were some like reports out there that WWE would try to purchase either New Japan or something like that, which I don't think it happened.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
But I could definitely see them moving into that market.
Yes.
That'd be freaking crazy.
Yeah.
So the landscape of professional wrestling and how it relates to the territories
mm-hmm.
is going to be very interesting in 2017.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, assuming the WWE expands to other international markets,
mm-hmm.
it'd be interesting to see if they kind of mirror the territory days where each, you know, like obviously the UK...
Mm-hmm.
Show will have their own champion.
Right.
Will each country or territory have their own champion?
Mm.
And you know, when the WWE main roster travels, mm-hmm. will whatever brand champ face that local champ.
Then you'll get something very much like the old NWA.
Yeah, and that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be really cool. That'd be really cool, exactly. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting to watch. I mean, the big question is, will the WWE be able to maneuver? Will they be able to properly diversify their revenue streams mm-hmm. to support that kind of? Are they going to be able to make? Is that going to be profitable for them? Is that going to be bringing in massive numbers of subscribers to do it?
Well, that's another aspect of it is expanding the subscriber base from the network mm-hmm. Internationally.
Yeah,
when you have these localized kind of mini promotions under WWE umbrella. Part of it, I'm assuming, is okay. Here's a whole new market we could, you know, of subscribers we can potentially get.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. Speaking of moving into other markets, the UFC and the WWE had probably the most amount of
kind of crossover
in 2016, and it's very, very interesting because they've had kind of an odd relationship. Like, there's been times when Dana White
strained between Dana and Vince. Like, apparently they don't really like each other.
Yeah, but they'll work together.
I think
it's like they don't like each other, but they respect each other.
Something like that.
Like, Dana White will talk shit about the WWE and deride it as, oh, that's fake stuff.
Yeah.
Fake fight, blah, blah, blah. But then, like, you know, but then he has no problem signing CM Punk to a freaking pay-per-view.
Or he'll let Ronda Rousey show up at WrestleMania 31.
Exactly. You know, they definitely worked together when it came to Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
You know, and that was sort of the biggest thing. Brock Lesnar returned to the UFC for 200, UFC 200.
Yeah.
He ended up fighting Mark Hunt and tested positive for drugs.
Yeah.
So performance enhancers.
But he won the fight.
He won the fight. I mean, he just sort of laid on Mark Hunt. It wasn't like a barn burner.
I still haven't seen it.
It's not. You're not missing anything.
I didn't think so.
It's basically like this story was Mark Hunt is a great striker, or he's a really good striker.
And Brock's reputation is that he doesn't have a great chin.
Yeah, exactly. So Brock basically spent the entire match
avoiding fists, flying at his fists. Yeah.
And then he would just sort of lay on top of it. He would take him down and lay on him, and he ended up winning. The win was stripped. As part of
it's a no decision, essentially, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't think they gave
or no win. Contest or something like that.
He was fined
$250,000.
$250,000, that's right.
Which is 10% of his official purse.
Yeah.
Not including like pay-per-view buy bonuses, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Which were probably off the charts.
Yes.
We also had CM Punk, like we said. That was big news. He finally, after two plus years of training.
I don't doubt he trained. He looked great. He was in great shape.
Yeah, he looked good. You know, once he actually stepped in the ring, he didn't look that good.
No, he didn't look good at all. Not at all. He didn't look very good after the fight either.
He took on Mickey Gall.
Yeah.
And
Mickey Gall whooped his ass.
And Mickey Gall whooped his ass
in a couple minutes.
In just a few minutes. Like, Punk was able to his credit, he didn't immediately go in there and get knocked out?
No, he didn't seem to panic once he was on the ground. He just didn't know what to do, I think.
He tried to defend himself, but like you said, he didn't panic. He looked like an absolute mess afterwards.
Yeah.
And then there was just like a news. Like, there's hardly any news in this.
Yeah, there's no news this week.
So Cliff Compton, who I guess was he Domino?
Yeah.
Okay, he was why is he hanging out with CM Punk in his storage locker?
I don't know.
Anyway,
they could be friends.
Cliff Compton said on Twitter he was given one of CM Punk's old WWE championships.
Yeah, legit belt.
Because he was going to, what was he going to do? He was going to auction it off or give it away?
Oh, I don't. I think when I read it, it was just they were looking through his storage locker.
Okay.
Cliff Compton said, hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
And Punk said, you can have it.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But
then also this year we've seen rumors and reports of WWE's interest in both Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor.
Well, now that, I mean, in the case of Ronda Rousey, you know, she's going to have a match with the current champion in her division.
At UFC 207.
Okay,
so
that's
pretty
right.
Soon.
Yeah. But, you know, last time we saw her in the UFC, she got murdered by Holly Holm.
Yeah. So, and she was on Ellen, Ronda was, mm-hmm. saying that she's winding down her fighting career.
Right, exactly. So it's natural to say, what's coming next for Ronda
Rousey?
Well,
also Stephanie McMahon, she's mm-hmm. been publicly, you know, whenever discussing the possibility mm-hmm. of saying, yes, we want Ronda Rousey in the WWE.
Yeah. So it's probably like long, you know, 2017, I would speculate probably closer to, like, she might make an appearance of some sort.
But 2018.
2018 would probably be a bit more reasonable. More yeah. I mean, 207's coming up pretty quick if she gets massacred.
But I thought she said she wanted to fight for the title and then have a rematch against Holly Holm.
Well, I imagine that would come. I mean, look, I think the UFC would probably take both those in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if from Ronda's perspective, if it would kind of depend on how she does in the title match.
I would think so.
Because if she gets if she does a CM Punk and gets completely murdered.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
She's
but
probably going to. She got. I mean, she wasn't a CM Punk job, but.
I know she got worked over by
Holly Holm.
Pretty significantly, yeah.
So I would think that it would depend. Like, if she gets completely destroyed, I would really doubt that she'd come back. Well, you never know.
As for Connor, he seems to have plenty of options. I just read a bit from an interview he did. Or was it his agent? Hold on. Talk about Conor McGregor for a second.
Conor McGregor is like the biggest draw right now in the UFC. Like, he's massive.
Yes.
And he was the first double title holder. He just beat some chump for his title. I don't follow UFC that much, but he was holding the belts in two divisions, and the UFC stripped him of one of them.
Yeah. Here, I got this quote here.
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine.
Conor McGregor recently spoke. This is courtesy of WrestleZone. Spoke with RTE Sport in Ireland.
Okay.
And said this. Was this the same thing I saw? Oh, yeah, it was. He said, I can go out and conquer the boxing scene as well. Because he's got his boxing license now here in California.
Okay.
That's a very serious thought. That's a very serious conversation that's happening. And he says, I've got those wrestling guys trying to contact me as well. I've got Hollywood trying to contact me as well. I've got so many options.
Does he have like a role in Game of Thrones coming up?
He's going to be in Game of Thrones, yeah.
That's going to be good.
And then he talks some shit about Floyd Mayweather.
Okay, all right. So Conor McGregor kind of owns the world right
also
now.
Also on this, Billy Corgan and former TNA writer meet with Ring of Honor.
Ooh.
This is according to Dave Meltzer.
Today is the greatest Ring of
Honor. That's interesting.
The WWE wants Conor McGregor and his
Triple H said as much. Yep.
Triple H said that his agent said, yes, we would take a look at any offers that came in, whether or not they'd be able to afford Conor McGregor. I don't know.
I mean, if Conor is considering boxing as an option,
mm-hmm.
he's going to make so much more money boxing.
A lot of money.
Than he is doing anything with WWE.
So much money. So it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be, you got to love the guy. He's got plenty of confidence. To say the least. I think it's bunk that they took one of his titles away. That's so dumb.
Isn't that a UFC rule, though, that you can't, not that you can't have two belts, but you have a certain window?
You have to defend in a certain window.
Yeah.
Man, some of those guys defend like, I don't know, probably.
And they just didn't think that he'd be able to defend both belts on a regular enough basis.
I would say, look, as long as you do it.
I mean, if the guy's making tons of money for the company, give him all the belts.
Give him all the belts.
If it means making money for the company.
Yeah, book him strong.
So long as, he can win fights.
It just bugged me that they just made Aldo the champion.
I know.
Because he got murdered by Conor McGregor.
It was like one punch.
It was one punch. He got destroyed. So at least because I know they just had that fight for the interim title.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why wasn't that just the fight? Like, why didn't they just, I don't know. So why wasn't that like the number one contender match?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. It's so dumb. I love Aldo, but I mean, I think that, he was good 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was great 10 years ago. But the rate of turnover, that's what's impressive about McGregor. The rate of turnover in the UFC is so high and he's.
But he's only really been on the top for a couple years, right?
Yeah, but still. Like, the fact that he didn't, the fact that he lost against Nate Diaz,
mm-hmm.
then he came back and he beat Nate
mm-hmm.
Diaz. A lot of people said that was kind of a controversial decision. But, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see where Conor McGregor heads. I would think it'd be closer to, 2020.
If at all.
I think it'll happen, but I think it'll be a while from now. Like, once he has expended his avenues for making money in legitimate fighting
mm-hmm.
because like you said, if he takes up boxing, he will make a lot of money. He still has a lot of money left to be made in the UFC. And so he's going to expect that kind of money from the WWE.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be able to afford it.
No, it'd be more likely that Conor starts doing movies.
Right. Exactly. And so I see once he loses some fights, once he drops some titles, once he proves that he can't box, for all we know, that could be that could be 3 to 5 years. We don't know.
And by then, who knows if WWE would even still want him.
You know, it all depends. He's such a charismatic figure that, you know, it's like the fact if they're still going to go through with that Big Show Shaq thing, you know, Shaq is a lasting figure because of his charisma.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. I could see McGregor because of his charisma. He's a lasting personality.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I could see, you know, it could be in 2021, you know, it could, but it's going to happen eventually. Like, he's not going to fade away.
Yeah.
That's one thing that the UFC, like, they have colorful figures. But he is very colorful, and like the difference between him and like everybody else is so great, you know?
Yeah.
So he's very unique. Our last little bit on 2016 highlights was Matt Hardy's career resurgence.
Yeah.
This was very bizarre out of nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere.
But it's been highly entertaining.
Yes.
So, of course, Broken Matt Hardy.
Even predating that, he won the TNA title off Ethan Carter III.
Right.
Turned heel.
Yeah.
And had a match against, was it Lashley? Somebody.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a match with him and Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
And I guess it was fairly brutal.
Yeah.
And he got stretchered out.
Yeah.
And during that match, he was broken.
He was broken.
And that was a jump start of the Broken Matt Hardy character.
Right.
Which, of course, led to the final deletion,
mm-hmm.
where Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero
fought Nero.
For the Hardy brand at the Hardy compound.
And it was a shot of pure life into a largely lifeless TNA. I mean, you know, TNA has plenty of fans, and they have plenty of decent, good talent. They've got some good talent. It's just their behind-the-scenes business dealings have driven away so much talent.
And far too often kind of overshadowed the actual product.
Right.
And here was something that was just bursting with creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Tongue often firmly planted in cheek.
It was just very inspired. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's, you know, Matt Hardy was, he was orchestrating this, and if this is what Matt Hardy's version of what pro wrestling is should be, then who are we to argue? Because everybody was interested in it, and everybody had their opinions, and it was very polarizing.
Yes.
But it's like, I think there's a place for that, you know, the flippy stuff, you know, in wrestling. I think there's a place for this. It's like, this is a direct, you know, 180 from, like, for example, what they're doing with what they call the Bruiserweights, you know, the UK tournament. This is on the exact opposite end of this. This is just fun and creativity and inspiration.
Yes. Yes.
And they're paying homage to pro wrestling. You know, it's kind of a love letter to pro wrestling in some respects. And then it found, you know, it made waves throughout the industry. You saw the WWE picked up on it. They did their Wyatt compound
video,
with the New Day. And, It's been really, really, and then there was talk that Matt Hardy was, you know, WWE was interested in him, and that is very, very interesting, and it was a total shot in the arm, a shot of life
to see the career arc of Matt Hardy, you know, often overshadowed by his brother,
and the fact that it's such a family affair is so heartwarming. You know, they announced it at the climax of Tag Team Apocalypto. That Rebby Sky there's another Hardy on the horizon.
Yeah.
And that's great.
I know.
Delightful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Maybe he'll eat green beans. I'm hungry. Speaking of hungry.
I know.
Yeah, my belly box is broken.
I need food.
Yeah. So let's take some questions.
Yeah. Right. First, from World Siesta Champion Mario. He's got a very long name, and in Patreon cut it off. So I'm sorry, Mario.
Oh, no. Patreon went ill.
Hey, friendos, new patron from Australia here. Thank you very much. And glad to now be a part of all this. Wanted to ask you a couple things all regarding the whole Emma Lena return.
Yes.
With all the hype she's created with her premiering soon promos, do you think they pushed a return back due to the whole Sasha Banks and Charlotte feud? If so, will she play a big part in the women's division, or will she stay down the pecking order? Also, Mario was curious, because if they waste her talent, would she have been better on SmackDown?
No, I think Raw needs some depth.
Yes.
And I think Emma can do a number of things. Number one, she's a fantastic wrestler. I have no idea what they're doing with this Emma Lena thing, but I'm interested because I think it's going to be unconventional.
Yes.
I think it's going to be some
There's
going to
be a
there.
Swerve going on here.
Something's going to happen there.
As far as pushing back her debut, you read that at least the delay in her debut is become a bit of an in-joke amongst the creative staff, correct?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it's because it's become an in-joke because of her debut, or the in-joke is pushing her debut. Pushing her debut.
In a way, if it's the latter, it's kind of like what they were doing with Eva Marie,
mm-hmm.
where they'd have her come out and then for whatever reason she wouldn't have her match.
Right, right. So I don't know. I think she'd have been fine on Smack. I think on Smack, if this is some sort of swerve, I think the gimmick feels too much like Eva Marie. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think Raw needs depth.
Yes.
And I think Emma and Paige, like, I really hope Paige sort of turns around. Shit. That was a big news story all year was Paige.
Yeah, we talked about her plenty in the,
we talked about her
wrestlers
a lot.
Who had the worst year. So
we
covered our bases there.
I don't know. I think hopefully Paige will come back healed and with the, she'll be on the same page as the WWE, so to speak. That was totally not planned. And her and Emma Lena will provide some depth.
Much
to the
needed
roster.
Depth to the Raw women's roster. Correct.
Yeah.
The patron formerly known as Danny Lloyd, Steve. If, when Noam Dar and Jack Gallagher feud, who will you be rooting for?
Oh my God.
What a quandary.
2017.
What a quandary.
I mean, I'll just be rooting for amazing television.
Quality
television.
It's like when two teams you like play each other in a game of sports.
Yeah.
You just want good sports.
Because if anybody can be labeled a scoundrel, it's Noam Dar. And I hope Alicia Fox, I hope he wins over her heart. I hope he does. And I hope it drives Cedric Alexander to become broken. Jesus Caros. Here's your one-time Venezuela friendo champion. Who's a better wrestler? Ooh, this is a Pandora's box right here, friendo. Ambrose or Reigns?
Better wrestler.
Who's the better wrestler? This is not an automatic... Because we've kind of poo-pooed both guys' wrestling skills. Like,
I'm going to say Roman Reigns is the better actual in-ring performer.
That is so controversial. But I agree. It's interesting, though. Although, hold on a second. Although, that might have been Triple H's fault. So, we gave high praise to Ambrose's match with Triple H.
Yes.
At
Roadblock.
Roadblock.
And we dumped on Reigns' match. Against Triple H Mania.
But we both kind of feel that's because Triple H was making Ambrose look really good, and he was making Roman Reigns work for it. That's our speculation.
Yeah, that's our theory.
That's our theory.
But here's my rationale, is that Dean Ambrose has been wrestling for a very long time. A very long time. And he's capable. He's not bad.
Yeah.
His punches aren't very good.
No, they're not.
And beyond the Triple H match and maybe the TLC match against AJ recently, he really hasn't had that many great, truly great matches. Reigns, on the other hand, has been wrestling that long.
Right.
So long as he's paired with someone that is a very good wrestler, he can put on really good matches.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, while he's working with these really talented wrestlers with experience, he's learning things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've criticized his inconsistent selling.
Mm-hmm.
Keep this conversation strictly based on in-ring products. So I won't mention promos or any of that kind of stuff because Ambrose is a vastly superior promo.
Absolutely,
guy.
Yeah.
Vastly.
Yeah.
So just Reigns is more dynamic in-ring.
In-ring performance.
Reigns is more dynamic. He's more athletic. He's more powerful.
Okay, I'm gonna say this. To me, it boils down.
And psychology-wise, I think it's a coin flip.
To me, it boils down to one thing. Effort. Roman Reigns seems like he's really giving it his all. He may not have everything because he's still learning.
But he's trying.
But God damn it, that guy is trying his freaking heart out.
Yes.
He really is.
Yes.
I kind of get the impression sometimes that Dean Ambrose goes through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's presented an opportunity like with Brock Lesnar, I think that he's really trying his damnedest.
Yes.
But I just feel, I wonder if maybe like all those death matches he was involved with, maybe it's like he just doesn't get... There's not the adrenaline rush anymore.
Yeah, the thrill isn't quite there.
And that's just, look, that's our theory. You can bash us if you want. There are plenty of positives I see in Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
But if we're going after his in-ring, it's so funny because earlier in the year you brought that up. You were like, Dean Ambrose isn't a very... When's the last time you saw a great Dean Ambrose match? And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you're right.
This is before Roadblock, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're right. There really hasn't been any great Dean Ambrose good, matches.
But he's not great.
We're going to get shit on by the Ambrose fan. I like Dean Ambrose.
Yeah, we like Dean Ambrose fine.
I like him
just because we think Reigns is probably better in the ring than Ambrose doesn't mean we think Ambrose sucks.
Ooh, hey, you know what? Roman Reigns is voted number one in the PWI 500.
That's all kayfabe, though.
That's all kayfabe. Oh, man. I'll tell you, how about this, Jesus? AJ Styles is better than both of them.
Yeah. Yes.
Magnum TA champion Nathan Raglan. Let's say you have to leave for a weekend and can hire any WWE superstar to babysit your babies. Who would it be and why?
John Cena.
Yeah, I'd trust the shit out of John Cena. I would totally trust the shit out of John Cena. But that was your answer. You said that almost immediately. So I'm going to come up with something else. You know what, Nathan Raglan? I'm going to have to go outside the WWE. I'm going to say Broken Matt Hardy because Jeff Hardy will be there. And I love the way that I see Jeff Hardy interacting with King Maxwell. It's the fucking cutest
That's
thing ever.
That's a great answer. Great
it's,
answer.
It's fantastic. I trust Revy Sky. I think they're such a, I trust in your Benjamin. I feel like they are just a really tight, happy family. And I would love, it would be wonderful. And maybe they'd even see it in their hearts to give Alabama, what did he say about the xylophone?
A magnificent xylophone.
It's a magnificent xylophone.
That's a good answer.
The Hardys. Who wouldn't want their that Hardys is, to babysit?
That is a good answer. Alex K657.
I'm going to ask, if we ever get a chance to interview Matt Hardy, I'm going to ask for an invitation to King Maxwell's next birthday party. Mm. I'm going to say, look, you're a father. You're a two-time father. I'm a father. My kid is about Maxwell's age, a little bit younger maybe, but she would love to come to the Hardy. I will fly out there myself. We just have an invitation to King Maxwell's birthday party. It'd be great. You can see monkeys. And we'll have green beans.
Alex K657. Alex thinks Sasha versus Charlotte has been great, but would have loved for Sasha to have won at Roadblock and Charlotte kept off TV and returned as an entrant in the Royal Rumble.
It'd be great.
As unlikely as it is, I think it would have been great. Do you think we will ever see men versus women wrestle in WWE like in Lucha Underground?
In the next 10 years, are we going to get any of that? If our theory is correct that where the indies go, the WWE follows, then I see it as a potential.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe they'll like leak into the cruiserweight division a little bit or something. I don't know. I could totally see Sasha Banks in the cruiserweight division.
I could see Charlotte taking on a bunch of people in the
Me too.
Men's division.
I mean, I think I honestly wonder if there. I'll put it like kind of matters here. If there are no more high profile like NFL domestic violence tapes that are leaked, if that. In popular culture, sort of doesn't have any high-profile incidents. Then I think one kind of leads to the other.
Yeah,
I think that WWE is well aware that there's a sort of a problem in that culture, kind of that the NFL always seems to be under a spotlight for that stuff. Like that Ray Rice tape was horrible. Mm-hmm. That was horrible. Mm-hmm. And that gets burned into the minds of many of their people in that demographic. So then when you see Charlotte come out and get punched in the face by a guy, you get that visceral recall of that. You know, it's like we don't because we understand. But in the general culture, I could see how they would see how those things relate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That being said, you know, you see Joey Ryan mix it up with these women.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, Lucha Underground, you have Sexy Star.
I'm
winning.
Sorry, with their top exactly. belt. Their top feud right now
is Sexy Star and Johnny Mundo.
Exactly, and they do it wonderfully.
Yeah.
So I think that if they
Lucha Underground, by and large, from what I've seen, I'm granted I haven't watched all their shows. Mm-hmm. I've seen about half of the second season, and that was when Ivelisse was part of a trios team with Son of Havoc and Angelico, and they won the trio belts.
You see,
and generally, it's their intergender wrestling is handled very, very well.
I think I just thought about this. I would think it would be so natural. I wouldn't put it past the WWE in the next 12 months to book Nikki Cross in a match.
See, that'd be interesting.
Against
yeah.
a male, against yeah. like a No Way Jose.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe even part of the story is No Way Jose not wanting to throw hands yes. with a woman.
Yes.
It would be really interesting.
And they've teased that because she's attacked.
She's attacked. I know, exactly. Yeah. So, so I it'll be very interesting to see if they do it. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did in some manner.
Yeah, yeah. Kurt Schwooski. Hey, friendos. Good old Kurt here.
I like that as his name.
If you had to pick one wrestler to be a telemarketer with you, who would it be? He, Kurt could just picture Rusev doing the ShamWow commercial right now and screaming, Machka! At the spills.
Oh, I like that.
Mojo Rawley.
Yeah, Mojo Rawley. I'd learn a lot from him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'd be like number one sales guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know, I'd love that a lot. Patrick O'Neill, the Cruiserweight division is really starting to heat up with multiple stories going on. My question is, who else could WWE add to their Cruiserweight division to add depth? And what top face do they need to truly compete? This is a good question. What top face yes. do they need to truly compete with heel Neville and Austin Aries?
Who could they bring in? Ricochet.
Oh, man.
Will Ospreay.
Oh, yeah. Ospreay's so much better as a heel, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good as a heel.
Ricochet. 100%. 100%.
100 million
percent. That guy's fantastic.
A trillion percent.
Because he could be a really good face.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a top face already in the Cruiserweight division.
Cedric Alexander. Yeah, absolutely.
Rich Swans.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great face.
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of, like, guys who are established that have the weight that Neville and Austin Aries have, I'm trying to think. Like, do you think if Cass ever splits off, do you see Enzo going to the Cruiserweights?
I don't really think. I mean, their dynamic is Enzo gets beat up.
Their dynamic is so linked to each other.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, Enzo, I think most matches he has like two or three moves of offense.
Yeah.
And apart from that, he gets beat up.
I would sooner see Enzo sort of, if Cass, if they want to really push Cass in a singles role, I could see Enzo just being his manager.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
James Ellsworth,
no. No, no, delete.
Anybody else? Who is anybody in Ring of Honor or New Japan you can think of that can make the jump? What about this guy?
What about Adam Cole, baby? Hell no, he's main roster. He's main all the way. Let me think. I guess Kyle O'Reilly, maybe. I don't know how much he weighs.
What if Kota Ibushi?
Yeah. Ooh.
Decided to sign with WWE.
Ooh.
That'd be huge.
That'd be massive. We have video questions.
One video question from Adrian Stroop.
Uno video question. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. So if you had to make two tag teams for Raw and two tag teams for SmackDown out of a pairing of one cruiserweight and one main roster star, maybe to bolster the division or maybe just to give more screen time to guys you think are underused, who would you put together and why would they be a good fit as a team?
Thanks, Adrian. So we're looking for a tag team consisting of a cruiserweight
and someone on the main roster, one for each brand, and why would we pair them together?
Okay.
I mean, this one's too easy, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Go ahead.
Simon Gotch gets released. Jack Gallagher and Aiden English.
Oh, okay. All right.
It makes sense. It's too easy, though.
I'm going to put together... Noam Dar with... Hold on.
How about this?
Okay.
Mojo Rawley.
And Noam Dar.
And Jack Gallagher.
What?
Yeah.
What is that?
Just because they're opposite.
That would be really entertaining.
Exactly.
That would be very
entertaining.
That's
the whole point of it.
Too weird.
I mean, their styles are polar opposites.
Yeah.
In the ring, personality-wise.
Yeah.
It would be very entertaining, though.
It would be very entertaining.
That's my SmackDown team.
I'm looking for somebody.
And Mojo needs something to do.
He definitely needs something to do.
On Raw, let me think.
All On Raw, I would pair... Brock Lesnar with Drew Gulak.
Oh, I was going to say Drew and Braun Strowman.
Oh, man. Hold on. I got to think of a SmackDown one real quick. I'm going to go on SmackDown. I'm going to say Bray Wyatt and...
Tony Nese.
Tony, Rich Swann and Bray Wyatt. Can you handle this? I don't know. I have no idea. I'm empty. I'm running on fumes, man. Yeah, we need these days off coming up here.
Yeah, we do.
We need some time off.
We do.
Too much talking.
Yes.
Anyways, that's it now for the Dirt Sheet on that high note.
Yeah.
That's it for the Dirt Sheet. Stay tuned next week. Next week's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this. I was thinking we were going to do that today, but... No, next week we got our predictions.
Yeah.
For 2017.
Our wrestling resolutions for 2017.
We rake each other over the coals over our predictions for 2016.
There's a couple we got, if not right, very close.
I wonder if we'll be any more accurate. Fast forward a year from now.
I know one I'm pretty damn sure about for 2017.
Ty Dillinger getting the NXT title.
Yeah, that's a lock.
I'm on board with that one. Anyways, we're going to go at lunch. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.